She's a business mogul.
Number one.
And wellness expert.
How can I help?
And now Chantel Ray and her amazing guests are here to guide you on your wellness journey.
Time to level up.
Welcome to the Waste Away Podcast.
Hey guys, welcome to today's episode. And I'm so excited. We have Josh Deck, and he is a Crohn's and colitis specialist. And if you struggle with IBD or severe IBS, or if you've got diarrhea or constipation, maybe you've got painful bowel movements, or you've got stomach pain, or any kind of worrying about like, oh my gosh, I don't want to get too far away from the bathroom, you know, any gut issues, we are going to talk about that today. So Josh, welcome.
Chantel, it's a pleasure to be here. Thanks for having me.
Well, I want you to kind of talk about, because some people are on different spectrums, right? Like some people are like, you know, I kind of have a little bit of diarrhea, a little bit of constipation. And then some people, it's like uncontrolled diarrhea or constipation. So talk about, you know, what, you know, some people don't even know what the difference between Crohn's or colitis is. Mm-hmm. And I want you to talk about, is it, you know, some people think, oh, I've got Crohn's, I'm going to live with this for the rest of my life. Or I have colitis and I'm never going to be able to get rid of it. So kind of address those issues.
Absolutely. You know, it's all a spectrum. And so for those who are listening who don't have Crohn's or colitis, this episode is still everything you need to hear about healing your gut, because we have to look at it as a spectrum. See, the Western medical world has spent so much time sort of differentiating these factors and saying, well, bloat is one thing. Irritable bowel syndrome, IBS, is another. Crohn's and colitis, or IBD, is another. And they put them in these boxes to say, look how different they are. But this is simply because they have to match diagnostic criteria. And what that means, diagnostic criteria is simply what they need in order to get your symptoms to put you in a box. When they put you in this box, that's your label now. Now you have this diagnosis, this IBD, or whatever it might be they diagnose you with, which tells them, like a bloody cookbook, here's the medications we can now give in this order. And if they don't work, well, next resort, we'll just snip, snip and cut the organs out. And so what I did is I spent my entire career now unwinding what the entire planet has been doing against, obviously, my expertise here. But this is why we're so successful. We can reverse 95%+ of cases. Now, I can't say in the context of what I do legally, I can't use the words cure, treat, or heal. But what I can say, because we have people who have been on medications for 15, 20 years who have not gotten help from their doctor, who have come into a program and gone through an 8, 12, 16 weeks completely off all drugs, all medications, no pain, no symptoms, no disease. So can I call it a cure? No. But can I say it's damn good? Yeah. But here's how we do it. We have to look at severity spectrum, right? Your body, inflammation is there for a reason, right? Chantel, if you went to the hospital, if you were outside gallivanting around the woods, for example, and you got a thorn stuck in your hand, and you left that there for weeks and months and years, and it was swollen and infected and your hand hurts and it's bleeding, and you went to the doctor and you said, hey, help me fix this. Imagine instead of pulling that thorn out of your hand, they just gave you numbing cream for the pain. Right? It wouldn't make any sense. You know that you are inflamed. Your body is clearly trying to push this thing out. It's clearly trying to heal you from something, but we never ask what it is when it comes to internal. We look for the thorn in the hand. We don't look for the thorn in the gut. Inflammation isn't random. We have to ask, what is your body trying to heal you from? Now, some people might have very mild irritation right now. You might be experiencing a low end of that spectrum of just a bit of bloat, just a bit of smelly gas. Maybe you're further up where you're having 5-10 bowel movements a day. You have some food sensitivities, a lot of loose stool or constipation, or you're severe on the far end of the spectrum where you're dealing with blood in the stool, mucus, 30-50 bowel movements a day, uncontrolled. Either way, there's this wear and tear process happening. Right? Imagine as if you went for a walk in a brand new pair of shoes and you're not wearing socks. Well, what happens to your heel, right? It rubs till it gets red, blisters, and bleeds. And that's how we see the gut disease spectrum of severity, from bloat to bleeding in the colon. And once we started looking at it this way, we were able to find root causes to all these problems, not random, not genetic.
Did you guys know that 97% of Americans are deficient in at least one mineral? It's true. You need more than a dozen minerals for your body to function at its best, but with the standard American diet, it's almost impossible. So here's where Beam Minerals comes in. Guess what? All you have to do, take one little shot of this one, one little shot of this one, and guess what? It looks like this, but it tastes like water. Take one shot, and boom, in 30 seconds a day, you're getting an entire thing of minerals instead of an entire cabinet of supplement bottles. So with Beam Minerals, we make mineral balance simple. I want you to talk a little bit about triggers, because I know for me, I've actually been diagnosed with psoriatic arthritis and I have a lot of joint pain. And I know that when I get stressed, it's almost like a trigger. And my husband will even say to me, because I'll be walking fine and everything's fine. But let's say we do a lot of traveling or something traumatic happens or, just something stressful happens at work. And all of a sudden he looks at me and, you know, my joints aren't working as well. I'm not moving as well. And he's like, you're stressed. I can tell. He's like, you're not working as well as you normally do. So talk about some of those triggers that can lead to autoimmunity.
Yeah. So there's actually three things that will lead to autoimmunity primarily. So the three things that will lead to, can we look at gut imbalances, right? These happen from toxins of some kind. It could be mold toxins, environmental toxins, microbial imbalances, fungi, parasites, whatever it is, or like nutrient imbalances. Those lead to gut disease. But if we're taking a step further into autoimmune disease, there has to be, typically, there's some kind of genetic component, but these factors turn genes up or down. They don't turn on and off. They're up and down, right? There's leaky gut, which again, stimulates the immune system. It causes confusion, throws inflammation everywhere. Imagine you only have so many firefighters to put out fires. And right now you have little fires all over the country. Well, your resources are completely dispersed. Where if it was one big fire in one location, well, the firefighting team between all the resources can put it out pretty quick, pretty easily. And so in many of these instances, we have people coming in who are dealing with inflammation all around the body due to things like leaky gut. Right? Toxins leak out, they go on the superhighways, jump around your lymphs and your bloodstream, and they get everywhere. You have all these inflammatory responses. Well, now your firefighters are dispersed everywhere. And so it can be very hard. And the other one is this trigger. So a stressful event, giving birth, maybe a really bad relationship over years and decades that's worn down the body. These stressors, these things can lead to autoimmunity. And so for someone like yourself to say, well, I have psoriatic arthritis, can you say you have these autoimmune conditions, even like Crohn's and colitis, they're considered autoimmune? I say no. I say, in fact, most of these are not yet autoimmune. They're on the spectrum of a risk factor of becoming autoimmune. This isn't just work I pulled out of my ass. I tell you, Chantel, I thought I made this up and I was like, I'm a genius. This is brilliant. And look at this autoimmune spectrum. Turns out it's been long discussed by functional medicine legends like Dr. Jeffrey Bland, like Dr. Amy Myers. She actually coined the term autoimmune spectrum. Where on the risk spectrum are you until it becomes autoimmune? And then you have a secondary spectrum of severity of autoimmunity based on contributing factors. We often think black and white, it's on or it's off, but it's all in spectrums of severity. And so for someone like yourself, like psoriatic arthritis, well, okay, you're stressed. What's happening under stressful conditions or stressful events? Well, number one, we have activation of that hypothalamus pituitary adrenal axis. So we can get extra stressors, extra psychological, emotional stuff that can ramp up the demands of the immune system. You're burning more fires around, which means you need more firefighters that we don't have, which contributes to inflammation. It can control or contribute to more inflammatory responses, excess cortisols and cytokines and other pro-inflammatory issues you might experience because of that stress. So now you're piling inflammation on further. Now we're lighting more fires. This contributes to leaky gut stress, right? Which lets things out, which goes around the body and leaks all these toxins everywhere, making more fires. It leads to altered motility or digestive function inside of the gut. So we're not moving food through the same way. Bacteria piles up. We get hyperfermentation, creating more toxins, creating more leaks, creating more fires, and on this compounds. And so for someone like yourself with psoriatic arthritis, commonly what we see is actually a fungal issue. Even though you might not see like candida in a GI map, you sure as hell could in an organic acids test from urine. You could see markers like one we look at called arabinose. And this is all these things, organic acids are like exhaust, right? When you exercise, you have lactic acid building up. It's like exhaust from these muscles. And that produces these byproducts, which make you sore. Well, everything in your body has a byproduct. And we just measure these through like an organic acids test, like a urine test. We can see, say, a fungal issue, which explains joint pain. It explains any bloat, fatigue, brain fog, skin issues, irritation, anxiety. All those can be explained by, say, a fungal issue. And we just have to go back and find what is the root causes or connections that are creating inflammation for you, exploiting maybe genes, maybe exploiting leaky gut, exploiting microbial imbalances that contribute to the stack or the pile of what looks to be an autoimmune condition.
So if someone has a fungal issue, what would be some things that you would remove from their diet so that their body, maybe their immune system is trying to heal you from different things and you want to remove some things out of your diet? What would be some things that you would want to remove?
Well, there's two ways we look at it. One is really severe stuff. Maybe I'll remove every carb, starch, fiber, sugar, alcohol, everything out of the body just so we don't contribute to the issue. On the other hand, say candida. Candida albicans is a very common fungal issue that we see. Even in the world of Crohn's and colitis, there are still roots to those severe diseases as there are would be with your situation too. And so if we were to look at this and go, okay, well, it's a fungal issue. Well, yes, we can remove all the things that might feed the fungus, thereby no longer contributing to the problem. We're no longer pouring gasoline on the fire, but it still burns. Even if it reduces, you still have coals, which could light up any time. Those embers are very volatile. And so I look at these, thinking like a game of whack-a-mole, right? You can't whack the mole unless its head comes up out of the hole, and then you can whack it. So sometimes you have to feed things, they pop up, so they can get their heads whacked back down. And so I don't, in our candida or fungal protocols, I don't do like most candida diets do. We don't remove every carb and every sugar. We remove much of them if you're like a 70%, 60% carb diet for sure. We still want you eating some because you have to catch fish with food. You need bait. And so that's what you want to do. Number one is reduce but not remove. Number two, look at the things that reduced yeast or break down yeast cell walls. There's two ways they'll really protect themselves. One, they have these membranes, for example, which can be very, very tensile, very strong. They produce all these toxins. Number two is biofilms. So if you're somebody who has maybe mucus in the stool, that's either a byproduct of inflammation or bacterial biofilms. And biofilms is mucusy substance they produce to A, protect themselves, and B, it allows them to move around and travel and breed. And so their job, like any living organism, is to pass on their genes and to grow. And biofilm lets them do that. So if you just hit these things with antifungals, but you have really thick biofilms, it's like a bomb shelter. They kind of just bounce off. We have to break those biofilms down. On the other hand, candida, for example, can use fibrin in its biofilm structures. Now, if you're familiar with the 10 clotting factors of blood clotting, they create these fibrinolytic structures. They use fibrin, almost like a scab. When we clot these things, it becomes very tense, very, very strong. And sometimes you have to break down these fibrin structures or these meshes that can be in like long-term, lifelong candida issues as they build their homes like a bloody beaver dam. And so we want to break those down, which allows us to get deeper into these biofilm layers, which allows us to get to the fungus itself and break it down. And so maybe that looks like biofilm disruptors. Maybe it looks like certain proteolytic enzymes. Maybe it looks like certain herbs. And a lot of the time, if not every time, I'll use something called caprylic acid. You can get that for breaking down yeast cell walls. If you respond really well to those, you probably got a fungal issue.
I don't know about you guys, but I am stressed. And if you're feeling overwhelmed this holiday season, then I get it. With all the family get-togethers, it is just a relentless source of stress. But anyway, there is something that I've got called Stress Guardian, and it's actually made by Bioptimizers, the people who make the magnesium breakthrough, which I love, love, love. But anyway, they are literally made this new product. It has 14 adaptogenic herbs and it just regulates your stress. I just actually took some right this second and it's awesome. If you go to stressguardian.com/wasteaway,
and put in Waste Away for 10% off your first order. It's stressguardian.com/wasteaway. Go there now.
Yeah, so talk about some more kind of like at-home remedies that you've seen work to kind of kill fungal infections. And I'll just name a few that I know off the top of my head. Like some people say, like, you know, taking apple cider vinegar has antifungal properties, or coconut oil or turmeric. I also think fresh aloe. One thing I've been doing is I have a whole bunch of aloe plants. Mm. And I've literally been taking the aloe, cleaning it, turning it into, like, putting it in the Vitamix, adding a little bit of ginger and turmeric to it, and then I pour it into these little ice cubes. And then every day I've been putting them, like, in my drink, and doing fresh aloe. I don't know if it's...
That sounds great.
Like just some of the other things, like oregano oil or garlic. Like what are some of your favorite remedies that you've seen that help with fungal infections?
Well, the first one you want to break is those biofilms. Otherwise, your remedies bounce off the biofilms like a bomb shelter. So that might be your proteolytic enzymes. It might be serrapeptase, lumbrokinase, natokinase, EDTA, which can help bind some metals and other junk. There's lots of great stuff out there you can use. But once you get into there, like coconut oil absolutely can be antifungal, but that's primarily because of the lauric acid and the caprylic or the capric acid. And so you can get those in more concentrated forms, like MCT has more caprylic acid, which can break down the yeast cell walls. Garlic contains allicin. And so you can actually buy like allicin as an extract, which is a bit more potent, but I prefer where I can go natural. So maybe a raw garlic or a lightly cooked garlic on your food. Oregano oil, like you mentioned, grapefruit seed extract, like apple cider vinegar can be as well. Berberine is really good. Neem, clove. There's another one that's really great for candida specifically called Pau d'Arco. That's PAUD'ARCO. That one typically comes in combinations you'll find with like black walnut and all kinds of stuff. The challenge
is there actually a tea that there. I will tell you that Pau d'Arco tea, I will say one thing about that, and I'm so glad you mentioned that, because I used to do that a while back. A friend of mine who was very thin, and I asked her, I said, you know, what's kind of your secret to staying thin? And she said, to be honest, I love sweets. And she's like, what I do anytime I want something sweet, she's like, I have a cup of this Pau d'Arco tea. And she's like, I don't know what it does, but like just the hot water. And she's like, I put some lemon in it. And that combination of the Pau d'Arco and hot water, she's like, it has to be hot. And she's like, it just makes me not want to crave something sweet and eliminates my sweet tooth. So, and it kind of worked. And I need to go back to doing that.
Well, I can explain that. So a couple different ways. One, if you're craving sweets, maybe you're low on fats. Maybe your body's looking for something. On the other hand, fungus like candida actually sends signals to your brain saying, feed me sweets. It sends a chemical signal to the brain saying, because they love sugar. So it's a signal for your body saying, give me this thing. Our microbiomes are vast. I mean, like Chantal, if we look at the data, we know we are born, right? Everybody has a microbiome. We hear about the gut microbiome, but they're everywhere. You have one rectally, vaginally, in your sinuses, like nasally. You have it on your skin, your hair, and your eyes, and your ears. Every organ, they all have these little like neighborhoods, these communities that communicate with each other. These make out the microbiomes. And even outside of that, you have this 4 or 5 foot extension called the holobiont, which is it's like Pigpen. You remember from Charlie Brown, he walked around with his dust cloud? We have that. Like these microbes interact with each other, sending chemical signals from you to me, talking in the same room. They're everywhere. And these microbes, I argue, may be more important than our DNA. They actually outnumber our cells 10 to 1. When we're born, we are 99% human cells, 1% microbes. What you get coming through the birth canal and the placenta, that's the seeding, the inoculation of these microbes. So that's 99% microbes, 99% human, 1% microbes when we're born. When we die, we're 90% microbes and only 10% human. And so they literally outnumber us 10 to 1. And so when we talk about what they do for us, they literally can determine how social you want to be in a given day. They help determine your personality, your cravings, what sicknesses you may or may not get, your immune system, your athletic potential can be correlated to weight gain, weight loss can all come back to our gut microbiomes, these other microbiomes. And so they do send signals to the brain saying, feed me, because they are hungry too. You eat, you poop, so do your microbes. And so they often want food. If you have an invasive species, or we call an opportunistic microbe like Candida, it sends a signal to the brain saying, give me sugar. And then we crave it. We go, I'm just craving this thing. Mm-hmm. Your microbes are asking for food. Your house pets are hungry.
Well, let's talk a little bit about the Crohn's. If someone, you know, really has massive problems with constipation, I personally have major problems with constipation. And then what happens is I'll try doing all these different things, and then I end up having diarrhea, and then it just kind of goes back and forth. Mm-hmm. So I want you to talk about binders for just a second and how important binders are and what someone can do if they're really struggling with constipation.
Sure. So binders are things, think of them like magnets. They're positive and electric, or positive negatively charged. It's just electrons. They just kind of suck things up. So for example, binders, an example of a binder might be charcoal. It might be humic acid, fulvic acid, zeolite, bentonite clay, citrus pectin, okra powder, like okra the vegetable, glucomin and fibers. All these things are binders. They kind of suck up and hold on to certain toxins. Now, binders can be very useful in the cases of detoxing, in the cases of mold toxicity, because they can draw these things out. Maybe use them for heavy metals or whatever you're using them for, glyphosate, they can bind onto these. Now, people often go, I want to try a binder. You can make yourself very sick. If you have heavy metals and you're detoxing without supervision, do not do it. You're probably better off leaving them where they are than trying to detox them arbitrarily. Because as they start to move around, they get lodged in neurological tissues, and now you've got MS. You never know, right? You got to be careful. So binders bind onto toxins and junk, but we have to use them strategically. Now, in the cases of someone who's dealing with constipation or diarrhea, again, it's inflammation on a spectrum, but they're two spectrums. So it's either high or it's low. You're either severely constipated. Like, I've had people with one bowel movement 2 to 4 weeks, which for some is unheard of, but I've seen it lots in my practice. People have gone a month without having a bowel movement. On the other hand, I've had people who are having 30 and 50 a day. Now, they're both their own spectrums, but the severity, are you going once a day or once every other day, or are you going once a month? On the other spectrum, are you going 5 times a day or 50, right? Just how your body happens to be expressing inflammation through constipation or through diarrhea. And again, we have to come back to why. Why are you inflamed? Now, Crohn's and colitis are different. Now, again, we talk about this pair of shoes. If you're wearing a pair of shoes without socks and you rub that heel red, raw, till it blisters and bleeds, that can be the bloat to IBS to IBD, or inflammatory bowel disease spectrum. That's your Crohn's colitis. Anybody's at risk for it. There are different factors that make you more prone, but really most of us will never know till we have it. And so the question is, why are we inflamed? How do we get this thing out? How do we reverse this? Constipated or not, or diarrhea, it doesn't matter. They're all spectrums expressing in one way. So our job is to get down to the root cause as to what's causing that inflammation. And so for yourself, there's a good chance, just based on symptoms alone, knowing these three sentences you've talked to me, Chantel, you might have a fungal issue contributing to inflammation, and your body is expressing the inflammation as constipation. Someone else might have it differently, expressing it as diarrhea. But either way, we have these two facets on the severe ends of severity, which are Crohn's colitis. Now, Crohn's disease is inflammation anywhere from mouth to anus, even perianal. People can get blisters on like their glutes, on their butt cheeks. You can get canker sores in your mouth or patches of inflammation inside your gut. And they can be very deep. They go in patches. We call them Peyer's patches. And they can be very, like, several layers of tissue deep. You can get fissures, like canals burrowing through your intestines, all kinds. Whereas colitis, we're going to say, is just more colon or large intestine. It's like scuffing your leg, like slipping on the pavement. It's a very surface level injury. And they tend to go in longer stretches rather than spots. Like a Dalmatian, they're in big chunks, maybe a 5 centimeter or 15 centimeter stretch of what we call, say, proctitis, where it's just the lower rectum, or maybe pancolitis, where it's the whole colon. But it's very surface level and typically in one bout rather than all over mouth to anus. And those are sort of your differences in inflammation and disease processes that, again, anyone can get. If you have bloat today, a year or 20 years down the road, you could have Crohn's or colitis.
So someone once said that ulcerative colitis is limited to the colon, while Crohn's disease can occur anywhere between the mouth and the anus. Is that right?
That's exactly it. Yeah. Ulcerative colitis is just colon. And there's colitis or ulcerative colitis. Remember, there's inflammation. Your heel in the shoe is red now. If it blisters later because it gets so severe, that's your ulceration, whereas Crohn's is anywhere. I also look at Crohn's disease as either a different expression or a more severe expression. I've seen people, probably 20%, 30% of the people I've seen with Crohn's disease were previously diagnosed with ulcerative colitis, where it was just the colon, but then it be kind of spread. But you think about it, it's all the same tissue. You put your finger in your mouth and touch your gums and your cheeks, that feeling, that soft squishy, that's kind of what your intestines are going to feel like, right? Similar types of tissue. Your mouth is actually the entrance to your GI tract. They share a lot of the same properties. And so mouth to anus, a lot of that tissue is the same. It's all part of the same alimentary canal. It's all the same assembly line. So if it starts in one place, it makes sense it can progress to another. Again, Western medicine disagrees with me vehemently, but I'm actively working with communicating right now at the Crohn's Colitis Foundation to get this education out there, teaching it at medical academies, just in the middle of trying to work together a research project here with Tiny Health, who's a new microbiome. They do shotgun sequencing for GI mapping. So we're trying to get this information out there more and more and get it widespread. But right now, you're not going to find this really anywhere else.
Guys, I just want to interrupt for just a second, and I want you to hear Paul Saladino talk about why liver is so important. And if you don't like liver, we have another option for you.
Your ancestors were eating liver. And the reason that this sort of wisdom has been passed down is because liver is very nutritious. It's basically nature's multivitamin. If you look at the nutrients in meat, they're great. You've got zinc, you got B6, you got B12, you got some K2. But if you look at liver, it really complements what's in muscle meat. And there are many unique nutrients found in organs, specifically liver as a powerhouse of these, that are difficult to obtain outside of liver. Like meat and organs are like peanut butter and jelly. They just go together. They're supposed to be eaten together. The easiest way to eat liver is just to do it raw. If you don't want to eat liver raw, you can cook it. But the reason that I like to do it raw is because there are unique nutrients in liver that are probably somewhat degraded when you cook the liver.
This really is like the most nutrient-rich supplements that you can find. And they are amazing. I have tried them. I absolutely love them. So just go to heartandsoil.co, use the coupon code Chantal Ray, and save some money there. Okay, so my dad is an internal medicine doctor, and unfortunately he, you know, speaking of spectrums, like, you know how some doctors are over here, right, with as far as pharmaceuticals, like let's say there are 10, like all they want to do is prescribe medicine. And then you've got like functional medicine doctors who are like, let's call them a zero. And to this extreme, like we're not using medicine for anything, like there's a supplement for everything. Well, he's probably a 7, meaning he is more on the medicine type train. And I'm more of like a 1, right? Like that's where I lie. Like as far as like, you know, I am kind of like, we can fix anything with our food and a supplement kind of idea. And one of the things that he said to me that was the biggest aha moment was he said, what happens is that people, let's say they need to remove 12 inches of stool and they only remove 6 inches or 8 inches. Well, then still in your body is 6 more inches of stool that needed to come out but didn't. But in their mind, they're like, well, I pooped today, so I'm not constipated. Same thing happens tomorrow. And so what happens is people poop, but they still could be severely constipated. That's one issue I want to talk about. And then the other idea that I want you to talk about is diarrhea really an overflow and type of like a form of constipation? So can you address both of those issues?
Totally. So if you're someone who's not voiding entirely or getting like an incomplete void, that could be constipation. Because ideally, you'll avoid as much as you can. Now, maybe it's a motility issue, which is just movement. Maybe it's still higher up and the colon hasn't made its way down. Maybe it's two separate meals, right? It's an assembly line. And if that assembly line has any kind of hiccup anywhere from chewing to inserting, to say, mixing with stomach acid to digest the juices in the stomach, to getting digestive enzymes or bile in the small intestine, to absorbing water and other balances in the large intestine, to excreting and voiding. If there's anywhere in that assembly line that is messed up or that is ill-timed, you might get these different patches. Now, if you're someone who has to strain or no strain, but you still feel like this feeling of incomplete voiding, like, oh, I really should go a little more, but there's nothing there if I push, then that can simply be, like you said, a low spectrum of constipation. Now, any doctor or medical professional who is on your scale of, say, 1 to 10, 10 is all medicine, 1 is all herbs. If you're a 2 to a 9, you're an integrative practitioner to some degree, right? That's what we call integrative, where pharmaceutical and holistic or natural both have a place, and we have to use them accordingly and respectively for what we feel is the best or safest option with the greatest outcome with the least amount of risk. That's ultimately our job. And so we look at this and say, okay, well, you have a slight spectrum of severity. Some doctors might go to Miralax to draw water into the colon instead of giving you something, maybe trying a fiber or trying just to hydrate you or trying something else that might be working against the root of your inflammation. Maybe it's an antifungal to see if your body will relieve itself and its own pressure, right? Something needs to be done. And so whatever spectrum you choose, those are the ways that we go about it as practitioners. Now, constipation and again, diarrhea, I look at them as just different spectrums or different branches of inflammation. How severe? Are you, like you said, a half bowel movement once a day, or are you once every 2 to 4 weeks versus someone who's maybe got transit time that's 10 minutes, but they go 3 times a day versus uncontrollable urgency at 30 and 50 times a day. It's all spectrums. Now, diarrhea, on the other hand, again, it's the same type of severity. It's just a matter of how your body's expressing that. Are you drawing more water into the bowel? Are you not, maybe your transit time is so fast, you're not having time to actually break down, digest, and absorb, so everything runs right through you. Like, did you know, Chantel, that leaky gut is actually a good thing? By design, by nature, leaky gut is a good thing. It's a defense mechanism. What happens is your body actually creates leaks. It opens the gap junctions between the intestinal cells to draw water in to flush things out. It wants to flush things out when it needs to, whether it's a toxin or it's something it can't digest. It goes, well, it's too big, get you out of here. And you look in the toilet and see whole pieces of undigested food. You can see these in your stool. And so that might be a transit issue. It's sustained leaky gut that goes long term, where your body is so inflamed, instead of water coming in, it's bi-directional where things also come out. That is a major issue that we deal with. And that's when leaky gut becomes a problem. But if you're someone with a bi-directional leaky gut or severe sustained leaky gut, and now you're having this chronic diarrhea, why? Is it inflammation? Because inflammation draws water. It can produce mucus and other things. Is it you're not digesting very well? And so your body as a defense is flushing things out undigested. And so maybe we have to address the issue higher up in the assembly line rather than lower down in the assembly line. It might not be a matter of just balancing your water. Maybe it's you need digestive enzymes, or it's something that's a bacterial or microbial issue further up preventing you from digesting properly. Right? There's always an explanation. We just have to go through and figure out what part of the assembly line, based on symptoms, is causing the problem that produces this end result of low stool, half stools, or too many stools.
Let's talk about parasites for just a second. And one of the things that I want you to also address is, for me, back to what I said of, you know, I think that, you know, for the most part, I probably should put myself more like at a 2 or a 3. And the reason is because when it comes to parasites, you know, I'm all about doing these different parasite cleanses and starting with that and trying to get, you know, different things to get rid of your parasitic infection. But I do think that there is a place for some in medicine for parasitic infections, like ivermectin, albendazole, tinidazole. And I want you to kind of talk about what is the number one parasite that people kind of come to you with, and what is your opinion on, you know, ivermectin or doing some more prescription type medicine for parasites in specific?
Okay, let's go one at a time. I'll probably have to circle back and ask those questions again.
Okay.
But first one, parasites are pretty common. The most common ones you'll see are the ones you see on a test. So you'll see things like cyclospora. You might see what we call D. fragilis or Dientamoeba fragilis. Blastocystis hominis, Entamoeba coli. These are very common types of parasites that we often see. You'll actually see them on a GI map, like a stool sample. You'll see they test for those. Now, parasites can be very difficult to test for. They make enzymes that break themselves down. So even if they do come out, you might not see them. If they don't see live protozoa, worms, or eggs, they might not actually classify them. They sometimes hide. For example, someone like, I believe it's Ehisto. That's your, Blastocystis hominis rather. Or Entamoeba histolytica is another common one. We call it Ehisto. They tend to like muscle tissue, for example. So it might slice through the gut lining and live in muscle cells. So maybe you're someone dealing with back pain a lot. You get these weird aches and pains. These Ehisto can live in the muscle tissue and they'll be very hard because they're trying to escape the gut. On the other hand, parasitic protocols, we often all just try some Mimosa pudica, some antimicrobial, something very basic that might stick to it. Sometimes they work, sometimes they don't. Some people, practitioners will argue parasites are easy to get rid of. Deworm yourself once a year, every 2 years, you're fine. Some will argue they're damn near impossible, and everyone is a very specific, meticulous process. It depends on the individual, depends on what's going on. There's a lot of nuances behind parasites. And so are they important? Yes. The top causes of Crohn's and colitis I see, which again, the far end of the spectrum, so maybe your low-end digestive issues now, are going to be fungal candida is probably one of the most common. Mold and mold toxins are huge. I see a fair bit of parasites in my practice as well. Heavy metals tend to be a byproduct of other things, less so the root cause. We see different toxic issues. We see Lyme disease often is contributing. There's so many things that contribute. What does ticks and Lyme disease bring? They bring bacterium and parasites and other issues. And this is where we start getting into the nitty-gritty of stuff. But what were your other two questions you had?
So as far as kind of some of these like different parasitic infection medications like ivermectin or albendazole, like if someone has tried all the natural methods, you know, they've done all these different parasite natural supplements. They've done this cleanse, that cleanse, that cleanse. If they still are having a ton of symptoms, what is your opinion on trying some things like ivermectin, albendazole, and those type?
I am a fan, but here's what we have to look at. There's so many people who might be listening, well, I've already tried that cleanse. I've tried the parasite detox. I've tried this candida and it's not working. We have to consider that different immune pathways get suppressed. So for example, if you're someone with a Clostridia bacteria and you have candida, they compete against each other. Maybe your candida or your parasites are fighting against each other. If you have parasites, it might be suppressing the immune pathways that you need to actually properly deal with your candida, for example. And so we have to go through these layers like a Jenga tower, pull one thing at a time, going back and forth, up and down until it falls apart. Some people will go in and just go all candida for a little while, then all parasites go, I'm not getting better. You probably have more layers and they're stuck together. And we have to peel these back one at a time until we can open up and get to these pathways, supporting the immune pathways your body needs to effectively get rid of these parts and pieces. This is why so many people try these things and get stuck. Now, on the other hand, I am a big fan of using pharmaceuticals where needed. I might have somebody wear down their candida with biofilm disruptors and caprylic acid and powder arco and all these antifungals for 2 months maybe before going into trying fluconazole or nystatin or something else. Maybe we have them work on a parasitic protocol and then we circle back after a couple of weeks and maybe we hit it with like Alinea, which is a really powerful antibiotic used for parasites. Maybe we use mebendazole. I think they're fantastic, but I think context is more important than the what we're using. It's the how and why we're using it. And this is where a lot of practitioners, I think, get missed is because they're doing all these things within a box, but they're not considering how those boxes interact with each other. Your parasites, your fungus, your mold toxins, your detox pathways, what genetic components are factoring in, they get missed. And so all these really effective or potentially effective treatments become ineffective effectively because they're kind of competing against each other. And that's where a lot of this gets missed and goes unseen and people do these cleanses or protocols and don't get better.
So let's say someone meets with you and they do a private consultation and they decide that they're going, you say to them, you know, I think we need to put you on ivermectin or albendazole or one of those. How then, because there's so many doctors that, you know, it's funny because I went to a GI doctor here locally and is very on the 10 spectrum that we were talking about. And he said something like this. He was like, in the United States, we do not have parasites. So he's like, we have a stool test. And you know, the stool test that they give you at the doctor's office comes back with no parasites 100% of the time. So that's pretty much pointless to ever take one of those. And he literally said, people in the United States don't get parasites. He's like, that happens in third world countries. Have you gone anywhere to get parasites in a third world country?
And
so getting a doctor to write you a prescription for ivermectin and albendazole and some of these others are harder than it is. So let's just say someone met with you. How would you then get them that prescription?
We have the same battle because I'm not a medical doctor. I can refer out to doctors in our circle. There are many doctors that I consult with or consult for, where they'll send me their IBD, their Crohn's colitis patients, and I get to work with them. And I can say, hey, doc, by the way, can you write this script? So we co-share. But that's the best way we can do it is through our affiliations with doctors. We have the same battles. I have doctors coming back all the time. Clients of mine who are going through a protocol will come back and say, well, my doctor will give me this because I said parasites or mold has nothing to do with my disease. I'm like, that's bullshit. 100% it does. So we go through and do our natural protocols. They get 95% better, go back, and their doctor goes, well, the medication must have finally started working. Like after 15 years, it's a miracle. And so we do have the same battle. There are phenomenal doctors out there who want to learn more. So I'm not bashing all doctors, just a conventional kind of blockhead, 10 out of 10 Western trained. But here's the thing, you know, they'll go in like this and say, okay, well, you don't get parasites in the US. Well, then why do we deworm our dogs and cats all the time, recommended by our vets? Why do we have to deworm them, but not ourselves? Most pets or pet owners are feeding their pets kibble, not even raw food. Like my dog eats raw, he's prone to parasites, right? So these are things we have to consider. Why deworm cats and dogs if we don't get parasites? Parasites can travel across anywhere and they breed and they hide and they just, parasitology isn't taught. And so that's something to consider, but we have to go through symptoms. If you can justify and explain your symptoms, if we can maybe write a letter of recommendation, and I'll link a bunch of stuff, I'll write a letter to a patient or to a client's doctor and say, hey, here's what we're seeing in terms of symptoms. Here's where it lines up. Here's the medical literature and research. Can you just give it to him? Like, what's the harm? Give him albendazole. What's it going to hurt? You know, what's ivermectin going to harm? Ivermectin was on the World Health Organization top 10 most essential medicines list for 2 decades until COVID hit. Then it got removed. It was labeled horse dewormer. But it actually won a Nobel Prize for parasites for humans to treat river blindness, which is a parasitic infection from Africa. It was a Japanese doctor who came up with it. So we have to go back to what we know to be true, not what we're told we should believe and understand. And this is where we have to go for patient advocacy. And patients have to learn to advocate for themselves, which is a very difficult and uphill battle in this current system we have.
Did you guys know that your thyroid's main food is iodine? And guess what? Mercury and other toxins gobble up your selenium, and your thyroid glands need selenium to convert iodine to thyroxine. So if you have mercury fillings and with all the toxins and mold, your selenium just gets gobbled up. So here's the bottom line. I take something called Peak Thyroid. It's got iodine, it's got copper, and it's got selenium. Everything you need to get your thyroid back to functioning without medicine. So go to ChantelRayWay.com/upgraded formulas. Use the coupon code ChantelRay to get a huge discount. So one of the things that I want you to address, because I personally believe, and every functional medicine doctor that I've talked to says, that because we have so much biofilm and because parasites are trained to try to hide, the chance of it being able to see a parasite in your sample is very, very slim to none. So you have to go by some of the symptoms. So what if a doctor says, okay, we did, and like I said, you know, I have another very good friend of mine, and she does nothing but, she's a gut doctor. And she's like, 99% of the time, we will not find anything in these stool samples. That the ones that you get at like the regular doctor, like a regular GI doctor, she's like, 99.9% you will not find. But I know that they have parasites because all of the symptoms that they've shown me. And as soon as I put them on the protocols, they're fixed. She's like, now there's other stool samples that are better, but even the best one, she's like, they will be about 60% accurate, best of the ones. So I want you to kind of talk about the stool sample area.
Yeah. So stool sampling, like you said, they hide. They will break themselves down before they exit. They're in biofilms. They get missed. Maybe they're not abundant enough. And that one stool sample that you gave maybe didn't catch it. There are samples or tests that'll do parasites. There's 3 to 5 day stool tests that they'll go through. But even then, a lot of those won't find them. So we have to go by symptoms. We know parasite symptoms are pretty concise for the most part. It's not hard to figure them out. And again, to go through and do a protocol, there's no harm in it, right? There's really not. On the other hand, there's red tape. Like I will bash Big Pharma till the day I die if they don't kill me first. But I talked to Dr. Paul Merrick, and Dr. Merrick has been cited over, you know, I think it's 30 or 40,000 times in medical literature and research studies. He's certified and licensed in every kind of medicine, from tropical to neurosurgical and everything. He's an absolutely brilliant doctor. And he was telling me, he says, Big Pharma, he says, they are bloody evil. Mebendazole, for example, used to be something like 10 cents a pill, right? Very cheap. But there were some pretty high-level celebrities who apparently had used this and turned out they had some stage 4 cancer, just happened to cure their cancer using mebendazole, which is antiparasitic. And then suddenly it went up to $555 a pill. So you got this 55,000% increase because, oh, look what it can do instead. So let's charge the money. And so it gets reclassified, it gets repatented, it gets redone, re-this, re-that, and now it's almost inaccessible. So we also have to fight the red tape of profits, capitalism, and bureaucracy on top of what doctors are told they can and cannot give. There's more restrictions around these things. Maybe they're not getting out to the public like they should. So symptoms have to trump all. If you've got gut symptoms, diarrhea, constipation, bloating, gas, abdominal pain, weight gain, weight loss, fatigue, weakness, skin issues like dermatitis, hives, itching, psoriasis, rectal or anal itching. You can have dry hands, dry feet. Maybe there's joint and muscle pain, allergic reactions, like all these things, sleep disturbances, dark circles under your eyes. Maybe you got pain around your appendix or your gallbladder. The parasites also like to hang out at the ileocecal valve, so between the small and large intestine. If you have difficulties in any of these things, those are signs that we look at. Do you or do you not have parasites? And this is where we can go back in and oftentimes do our own stuff if the doctors won't oblige with medication.
And I hope that, you know, people listening to this, they could even, you know, let their doctor listen to this episode. Because what you just said is like taking ivermectin or taking albendazole, like the side effects of that is very, very minimal and compared to the benefits that it could have, especially if someone's saying, look, I have all these issues. Check, 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 check. I've had doctors say to me, like, yeah, here's all my symptoms. This is all the things I have. I want to get prescribed this. And they're like, well, your stool test says that you don't have any parasites. So no, we can't give that to you.
And now we're so treating a chart.
How would you respond to that doctor if they said that to you?
Yeah, treat your patient, not your charts, right? Like that's what we have to do. We're so boxed in treating because, I mean, again, a lot of their hands are tied with red tape where you have to meet this diagnostic criteria before I can give this thing. Otherwise, I get my hand slapped or I get reprimanded or I lose my license. And that's the red tape around the bureaucracy of medicine in the Western world. Like, give you a great example, Chantel. I had a client of mine. She had Crohn's disease. 12 weeks into the program, she was completely free and clear of any signs, any symptoms, any disease, no blood, no pain, no ulcers. Nothing, like poof, like it disappeared like a freaking genie. She went back to her doctor at the 12-week mark in the program. She happened to get it. She was due for a new checkup. She did a colonoscopy, CT enterography, no signs whatsoever of disease. Like it's gone. And her doctor said, well, I'd like to put you on Entyvio anyway. Entyvio is an immunosuppressive drug that they use to treat severe disease like Crohn's and colitis. So there's like your body is inflamed. And so to stop the inflammation, they give immunosuppressive drugs. Because remember, your immune system reacts, creating inflammation. So to manage your symptoms, they suppress the immune system. So there's no inflammation, therefore no symptoms. And she went back to her doctor and she said, I'd like to put you on Entyvio. She goes, why? Well, because you have Crohn's. No, I don't. Well, yes, it is. And she's looking at her chart. because your chart says you have Crohn's, therefore you have Crohn's, therefore take the drugs and suppress your immune system, regardless of what your current symptoms are. So you've gone beyond treating the patient and actually applying the medicine and critical thinking. We're now treating the paper for the sake of bureaucracy or funding or profit or whatever the motivation might be. We're not treating patients. We're not treating symptoms. What they're doing is treating documents. And that is an asinine way to do medicine. There's zero critical thought behind it. And it just boils my blood because you have people taking all these drugs needlessly when in reality, there are many other ways to reverse and fix these problems.
I want you to talk about some of the things that if someone's having these kind of symptoms, top things that you would A, remove from their diet to kind of get rid of some of that inflammation just to start. And then what is kind of your, like, if you had to pick your top four supplements that you would use to rebuild the microbiome and kind of restore the balance in the ecosystem, what would you do? What would you recommend to somebody?
So that I will do my best with, because it is actually an extraordinarily loaded question. However, let me see what I can do for you on that one. So if I were to have somebody in, for example, who were trying to, said, remove some of these problems, or is it restoring the microbiome?
Like remove, like, would you say like, okay, if you're having problems, remove gluten or remove dairy.
Oh, right. Remove.
Or, yeah. Like, what would you, would there be certain things that you'd say, okay, step one, let's get rid of A, B, C, and D.
Yes. To like reduce inflammation.
Yeah.
So dietary, number one, bar none, unquestionably, alcohol, sugar, processed and refined foods, right? That's number one. Second to that, I do remove dairy and I do remove gluten. People fight me all the time. Gluten doesn't bother me, blah, blah, blah. I'm like, you know what? If you actually have an autoimmune condition through a process we call molecular mimicry, where it can look like certain things your body can attack, gluten can cause inflammation for up to 3 months. And so if you're somebody, I just have a bite of this on a birthday or just a holiday, just a Christmas, you're inflamed 12 months a year. So you're never actually going to know. And so gluten, because the 99.9% do become inflamed or have some kind of issue either in their gut or outside of their gut. The lucky ones, Dr. Tom O'Brien's big on like anti-gluten. Had him on my show twice now, and he's talked about gluten. He says the lucky ones are the ones who do not get gut or do get gut issues. Because you eat it, you go, oh, I have a gut issue. It must affect me. You know right away. The unlucky ones are who eat gluten or other inflammatory things, and maybe days later symptoms show up. Now we don't know what's causing it. And so I remove gluten and dairy every single time, alcohol, sugar, processed refined foods. Basically, if it's something your great-great-grandmother would not recognize as edible, it's gone right away. That's the first step. The second step we want to look at is like a toxic inventory. And that might be toxins in your home, toxins in everything. How many chemicals in your shampoo? These have endocrine disruptors. We have to go back through basically, again, things that didn't exist 400 years ago. Try to remove them. Live like, you know, like Amish people do. So those are our first removals, because that is, picture like you got a cup. When that cup of water overflows, now you've got symptoms. Now you've got inflammation. Now you've got toxicity. Now you've got disease. Well, toxins in your perfume might be a one drop in the bucket, but death by 1,000 cuts. You put 1,000 drops. You got perfume. You got pesticides. You got herbicides. You got scents. You got air fresheners. You have this chemical, that chemical. You're drinking this thing with this artificial flavor. They're drops in the bucket. Those overflow and lead to problems. So I want to remove those over time as well to stop contributing to the problem. And the less things your body has to fight against, the more firemen you have to go out and put out these fires. You're not spreading your resources too thin. So that's the first place for removal. Dealing with the microbiome itself, there's a couple of basics we can look at. People want to look at probiotics and postbiotics even, or prebiotics. Now, for listeners, think about fish in a fishbowl, right? The fish is a living organism. That's your probiotic. Fish food is a prebiotic. That's what feeds the organism. Postbiotic is fish poop. Your bacteria poop out good things, bad things, beneficial things, the works. And so if you feed a bunch of prebiotics, a bunch of food to your bacteria because you heard they're helpful, well, for you, for example, Chantel, if you do have a fungal issue and you feed a bunch of prebiotics, well, the dominant species, if it's candida, they're going to snap that up and eat it. You're going to precipitate and make that issue worse. So I don't often go into a bunch of pre, post, and probiotics until I know what's going on, and I will use them strategically. But some things that are generally very good for a gut that can be really nice is like berberine can be very nice if it doesn't cause you GI upset. There's another berberine form, I forget, but it's actually like almost like a micronized form, like a pre converted form, so it doesn't cause GI upset. But berberine can be great. Aloe vera, there is, you can look at DGL can be really nice, right? That's deglycerinated licorice root, because true licorice can give people blood pressure issues if you're prone to that sort of thing. Another one we might look at is like slippery elm bark powder can be really nice for cooling, having like anti-inflammatory properties. It can also help aid in that mucous membrane, right? We talk about that wearing a pair of shoes without socks. Well, slippery elm, DGL, aloe can help contribute to the mucous membrane, which is like putting the sock on your foot, preventing this breakdown, this wear and tear of the tissues. So there's lots of basics we can use, but I want to be careful to preface. Obviously, I'm not a doctor. This isn't medical advice, but I do want to preface that so many people, and this is the part most people will forget the entire episode. This is the one they'll forget the most. So I want to hammer this one in. It's not about what supplement can I take to band-aid my issue, because now you've just got plant-based medication, right? If you're just using slippery elm or just using these things to cover your symptoms without getting to the root and strategically building a plan with a start, a middle, and an end, you're not fixing anything. You've just gone from pharmaceuticals to plant-based medication. So we have to be very deliberate in how we're applying these different protocols or supplements. Otherwise, you'll be on them for life and barely keeping up. You're pouring water on a fire while you're pouring gasoline. And so you want to do two things at the same time. Make a plan, work with a professional, have a program, a plan, and an end goal in mind so you know where you're going, why, and how you're taking these certain things.
You know, it's so funny because one of the things that we've been saying over and over again, I don't know how we got it, but my son said something like, I have a plan, I have a plan. And then my husband said something like, everyone has a plan until you get punched in the face. And Mike Tyson, you know? And, you know, it kind of reminds me of that. It's like you have this plan and it's like, everyone has a plan until they get punched in the face. And the truth is, you will just keep getting punched in the face. Like,
yeah.
And you have to just keep going and go, okay, that didn't work. Now we have to pivot. Now you get punched in the face again. Now we have to pivot. And so I just want to encourage some people out there because I know more than anyone. I feel like I have definitely gone through my share of gut issues. And so if you are really going through it, I really want to encourage you. It's okay. Like, you had a plan. You got punched in the face. Get back up. We're going to get punched again. And we're going to get through it. So this has been wonderful. Tell listeners where they can find you and where they can follow you.
Well, everything you need, all my social, everything's linked. Any contact information can be found at gutsolution.ca. That's all singular in Canada, gutsolution.ca. There's nowhere in the world we can't work. You don't have to be in Canada to get some help with this stuff. If you want to reach out and get some really dedicated help to your Crohn's and colitis, jump in, reach the Contact Us page, send me a message, and we'll see what we can do to get you guys into something to finally reverse this problem. If you're someone who's like, you know what, I just want to get my feet wetter, I just want to get my gut a little better, we just launched a brand new program on Skool. That's S-K-O-O-L. It's a phenomenal platform. It looks inside, it acts and looks like a Facebook group, but it's got courses and calendars where we're doing all kinds of coaching calls and live events and giveaways and bringing in guest speakers. And it's just an amazing hub to come in and get help for yourself. Even if you don't, it's a Crohn's and colitis group. But if you're on that spectrum of severity, the tools we give them will help you too, right? These are the most severe. They're going to help you anywhere you are. So we don't want to exclude you because it's for Crohn's and colitis, but because it's what I do, those are the people we're here to really help. But everything you need can be found at gutsolution.ca.
Awesome. Well, Josh, it's so nice been talking with you. I've just really enjoyed our time. And I really appreciate all you're doing to help reverse Crohn's and colitis.
It's been a pleasure. Thanks for having me on board.
And you guys stay tuned. We've got another episode coming up in just a few. Bye-bye for now.
Hey guys, thanks for listening to today's podcast. If you enjoy the podcast, it would mean the world to us for you to leave a review on iTunes to get this podcast out to others that may have the same questions that you do. And as always, if you have a question that you want answered, email those to questions@chantelrayway.com. Thanks again, and we'll see you next time.